Welcome to Ringside with Eric Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Colorado Hockey Now beat writer, podcaster here at Mile High Sports, and I am finally rested. My goodness, the trade deadline this year, mixed with those Avalanche games, mixed with a trade on the night of the game that they beat San Jose and got Brock Nelson, mixed with the fact that we got news that Mikko Rantanen had the framework of a deal with the Dallas Stars that very night. Holy crap. It was a weekend. It's now Wednesday afternoon. The Avalanche are on the road. They went into Minnesota on Tuesday. They obviously played at Ball Arena on Monday, shut out the Chicago Blackhawks. Only surrendered one goal against the Minnesota Wild, but only scored one goal before losing in the shootout. So defensively, ever since the first period of the Toronto Maple Leafs game where the Avs led in three goals, they have given up a total of two goals since in eight periods. You had one against the Leafs in the second period, none in the third, none against Chicago in three periods, only one against the Minnesota Wild in three periods, plus a godforsaken boring overtime before Mackenzie Blackwood flubbed in the shootout. God, he looks like someone that hates those things so much he doesn't even want to try. I'll get a little bit more into the shootout thing shortly after. I'm kind of going to jump around. It's been three games since the Avalanche, since I last podcasted, obviously Toronto, Chicago, and Minnesota. Three games and four nights with the new guys. Like, just an unbelievably busy schedule. But before I start, I do want to get into like a little bit of a scheduling thing for the Avalanche. For starters, I believe the regular season, and I'm going to confirm this really quick, goes until April 17, I want to say is the date, and that is correct. Seven games on April 17, six games on April 16, 10 games on April 15, four games on April 14. So that's a total of 13 plus 16, 29 games in the last 4 days of the regular season. And those are 29 games around the NHL after the Avalanche end their season on Sunday, April 13. So it is a strange schedule. So if you go on the 14th, let me just look at teams around the division. Dallas is at Detroit. And then Edmonton versus LA. But Dallas is at Detroit on the 14th. On the 15th, you have the Wild hosting the Ducks. On the 16th, you have the Jets hosting the Ducks. No Minnesota, as far as I can see. And then on the 17th, you have none of them. Okay, so it's not as bad as I thought. I guess Dallas and Winnipeg. Actually, no, Dallas also plays Nashville. Okay, so that was very bad podcasting. Here's where we are at. The Dallas Stars, after the Avalanche play their last game on April 13, the Dallas Stars will still have two more games on the road in Detroit, on the road in Nashville. So if you want to lock up any kind of division title, it's got to happen pretty soon before then. Otherwise, you're going to be scoreboard watching. So let's say you get to game 82 and you're 1 point up on the Dallas Stars, you basically know that Dallas Stars have two games to make up that 1 point, just as an example. But it's a very fascinating schedule in that sense, and I think that's going to be where the Avalanche get their relief. The Dallas Stars right now are in the middle of a 4 days off stretch before their next game. So this is their time to get relief. But I will say I kind of like the Avalanche's schedule this year in March, because this is unlike anything we've had in years past. Usually March is like the holy shit 17 games month for the Avs, where they just play games like every other night mixed with a couple of back-to-backs, no rest, no recovery, hit the road, come back home. It's usually pretty chaotic. This year, right off the bat, they got 3 days off before starting on the 4th. 4, 6, 8, 10, 11. That's the stretch that they just finished. Now they got 2 days off. 14th, 16th. Then they got another 2 days off. 19, 20, 22. So another 3 and 4 nights. Then they got another 2 days off before they start a homestand. every other night. Detroit on the 25th, LA on the 27th, St. Louis on the 29th, Calgary on the 31st. It's honestly a very, very good schedule for the Avs in March. It's favorable, if you ask me. And given the teams they're playing, I mean, they just played Pittsburgh, San Jose, and Chicago out of their last five games. They played Minnesota, obviously, on the second of a back-to-back, but you got a point out of it, and that's a team that's been struggling. You had Toronto, but coming up, Calgary, so-so. Dallas is tough. Toronto's tough. Then you got Ottawa and Montreal. Again, so-so teams, followed by Detroit. Those are three teams fighting for a wild card like Calgary. And then you got LA, St. Louis, and Calgary. So in terms of teams that are like locked into a playoff spot, over your next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games to close out the month, it's pretty much Dallas, Toronto, and LA. And you just beat Toronto. You feel good about that LA game, given how they've been playing recently. Granted, they've won 3 straight, but I think they only have 5 of their last 10. And then, of course, you got a slobber knocker on Sunday against Mikko Rantanen and the Dallas Stars. I'm going to do a separate podcast for that one as a preview followed by a post-game review. So I'm not going to talk much about that game today. What I am going to talk about today are the Avalanche just had 3 games in 4 nights. Following the game against the Sharks, which feels like it was literally yesterday, where their 3 new additions all joined the lineup. Well, the third one joined a little bit earlier, but Eric Johnson, if you want to include him. But whatever, I'm talking about Ryan Lindgren, Charlie Coyle, and Brock Nelson. Brock Nelson and Charlie Coyle, those are the new ones that just played for the first time 3 and 4 nights. Eric Johnson got into one of those games. Obviously, not much of a new guy. Love everything about that addition. I did a podcast about that a few days ago. If you didn't catch it, please do catch it in the podcast stream. But what we're seeing, the early returns of the trade deadline for the Avalanche, is a team that is built to win in the playoffs. I love everything about what the Avalanche did here. I love the fact, like, something that I didn't like before these trades is how the Avalanche make moves, like, and I've always hated when they did this with players that were not proven in those positions. They'll go out and trade for a guy, or they'll slot in a guy, and they'll be like, yeah, he's the 3C. And that specific example, we've seen it twice. We saw it with Ross Colton. We saw it with Jack Drury. When they brought in Ross Colton, this is our 3C. We're going to shift him to C. This is our 3C. And in your brain, you're like, okay, great. 3C, that position is handled. We learned pretty quickly. It took about a year or so, but Ross Colton's more effective on the wing, and he's obviously in a little bit of an offensive struggle this year since the injury. Then they went out and got Jack Drury, and that was something that Chris McFarland and Jared Bednar both said. And I remember going into the trade deadline, I remember kind of feeling, and if you guys read my work on ColoradoHockeyNow.com, a couple Mondays ago, my weekly Monday morning column was, is this Avalanche season worth saving? And the reason why I took that approach was because, hey, you know, this is a team that it was well documented, wanted to improve on what they had in Casey Mittelstadt at second line center. But then you go out and do that and you bring in a depth defenseman. They brought in Ryan Lindgren. Let's say they upgrade Casey Mittelstadt. Let's say Casey Mittelstadt was part of the Brock Nelson trade, just as in this made up world. Okay, well, great. Well, your third line center is still Jack Drury. Your fourth line center is still Parker Kelly. Your third line wingers are Joel Kiviranta and Ross Colton playing with Jack Drury. That's not much of an offensive line, and there's not much maneuvering to go along there. And then on the fourth line, you have, you know, some kind of combination, most likely Miles Wood, Logan O'Connor, Parker Kelly. You still don't have a strong bottom six. The difference one frickin' player makes. Not only did they upgrade on Casey Mittelstadt, not only did they bring in that depth defenseman, but they corrected a different issue. No more of this. This guy's a 3C. Like, we can't undervalue what JT Compher meant to this team, especially in that season after he had a tough 2021 season. There is no 3C that you bring in that's unproven that you can just slot in and say, we're going to do this and win the cup. That's what I loved about the trade deadline. They went out and got Charlie Coyle. They slotted him in at 3C. Where that's a guy that, number one, he belongs there. Like, you know, we saw the Bruins the year they won 64, 65, whatever the hell amount of games, and blew it in the first round. But it was, I believe it was Bergeron, then Krejci, then Coyle. Or it was Bergeron, then Krejci, then Zacha, and Coyle played on the wing. But he was slotted more appropriately. Last year, obviously, Bergeron and Krejci both retire same summer. Last year, he was elevated to the second line center spot and did a very admirable job with Pavel Zacha as the two top six centers. He had 25 goals and 35 assists. That's well beyond where he should be. Basically, Charlie Coyle, like Jack Drury, if I was to like, if there's a first, a second, a third, and a fourth line, and imagine you can like pick a number in between, Jack Drury to me is like a 3.75 line center, if that makes sense. Like he's closer to the fourth line than he is to the third line, but he's better than a fourth line center by a touch, but not good enough to be a third line center. Like that's the way that I see him. Charlie Coyle kind of reminds me of the same thing, but take it up a notch. He's like a 2.75 centerman. Should he be your second line center? Abso-freaking-lutely not. And if you have to start next season like that, that sucks. We'll bark up that tree when the time comes. However, he's better than a third line center, in my opinion, especially in the playoffs. We'll start to see his numbers kind of elevate a little bit. Obviously, Boston this year, it didn't go well. They brought in Lindholm. They still have Zacha playing a big role. So he was kind of up and down the lineup. They didn't really have a good spot for him like they did the year before where he was slotted in appropriately. So, you know, that mixed with the Bruins season in general explains his production. But he's better than a third line center. But I wouldn't say you want him as your second line center, if that makes sense. It's the same example I used with Jack Drury. So what I'm ultimately saying here is the Avalanche finally have two guys after Nathan MacKinnon that are both better than a third line center. You have a solid, like, no questions asked, unequivocal second line center in Brock Nelson. And then you got Charlie Coyle, who slots in excellently on the third line. And the guy you had centering your third line last year, Ross Colton, well, now he slides over to the wing. And the guy on the other wing, I think I'm becoming Joel Kiviranta's biggest fan because I've written about him now two games in a row. But he slots in on the third line left wing spot. Now it makes sense. Just that trickle-down effect of one guy. There's a reason why I asked if this season was worth saving. Number one, the Avalanche were losing games. Val Nichushkin comes back. It was kind of murky, his health at the time. He comes back. He looks healthy. He looks great. Now you have, if you're the Avalanche, you have a need for a depth defenseman. You get two, with Eric Johnson being one of them, and he's kind of pushed Sam Malinsky. Both of those guys look like solid number sixes now. So now you have seven really good defensemen. Good, like really good for their roles. You know, I'm not saying Sam Malinsky is a really good guy that you can put as your number two or your number three, nor is EJ that. But you are very comfortable with, obviously, Cale Makar, Devon Taves, Sam Girard, Ryan Lindgren, Josh Manson, one of Sam Malinsky, or Eric Johnson. And what I love about Ryan Lindgren and Josh Manson is that when Josh Manson's having a tough game and you want to play him 15, 16 minutes a night, great. Ryan Lindgren is a killer. And when Ryan Lindgren is having a little bit of a tough night and you want to play him 15, 16 minutes a night, great. Josh Manson is a killer. You just kind of hope they're both not struggling at the same time, because if they are, then you're riding Kale, Devon, Sammy G. Hopefully Malinsky's having a better game, or EJ or whoever, so they can kind of up their minutes. But you get what I'm saying. Like, there's no more dead weight on the roster. You're not playing Oliver Shillington. You're not playing Calvin DeHaan. Like, those guys didn't fit from the start. Shillington, I was willing to entertain and see what he's got. Calvin DeHaan was puzzling from the start. And then you have Keaton Middleton, who's done an admirable job whenever he's called upon. You don't want him to be called upon, but that's a great dude who's the perfect number eight defenseman. You know, it's impossible to have many guys better than the skill set of Keaton Middleton as your number eight option when you have the salary cap crunch that the Avalanche have and the Stars making as much money as they are. So that's the defense. And at center, one guy made the world a difference just by having Charlie Coyle. It kicks Jack Drury down. It kicks Parker Kelly to the wing, and it kicks Miles Wood and Jimmy Vesey out of the lineup. Now you have a fourth line where you love Jack Drury at center on the fourth line. Parker Kelly can play on the wing and go out and be a friggin' pesky little rat in the most complimentary way possible. And on the other side, you have Logan O'Connor, who was in that precise position, fourth line right wing, the year you won the Stanley Cup. You feel really good about that lineup. You feel really good about having Joel Kiviranta, at least I do, as like this, I mean, let's face it. The year you won the cup when Burakovsky got injured, it was what, game one or game two of the, or maybe game three of the cup final? Like, your third line wasn't Burakovsky, Newhook, and Compher. No, it was Newhook, Compher, and this pesky guy named Nicholas Aubé-Kubel who had to come in and play cleanup. And when it wasn't him, it was Nico Stern. But Aubé-Kubel, like, that's the role Joel Kiviranta's playing. You're always going to have a guy like that where maybe he doesn't give you offense, but you know exactly what you're going to get every single shift. Oh, and by the way, Joel Kiviranta's got 15 goals and 6 assists. Are you freaking kidding me? Like, for all the things we talk about Ross Colton, Ross Colton's got 15 goals and 8 assists in 49 games. Joel Kiviranta's got 15 goals and 6 assists, yes, in 66 games. But he makes league minimum. He plays a big role on the PK. He plays a big role on that third line as a puck hound with Charlie Coyle now. This guy doesn't take a day off. Now with the new additions, I also love what's happening to his ice time. Because look, here's the reality. Someone like Charlie Coyle, someone like Ross Colton, you pretty much are counting those as like, again, let's use the first, second, third line example with decimals. Those are like, especially Ross Colton, like that's a 2.5 line winger. That's not a third line winger. That's a 2.5 line winger. So you have Jared Bednar like coming out of a power play where he'll play like some kind of makeshift line where it's, I don't know, Lekkonen, Coyle, and Colton, for example. You trust 8 players in your lineup to play in the top 6 with obviously the caveat that Charlie Coyle, you can play him on the wing as well. Like, if, God forbid, Lekkonen gets injured, or let's use a more positive example. You wake up one morning and Arturi Lekkonen, Jonathan Drouin both have the flu. They're puking their brains out. They can't play. You feel pretty comfortable about having Ross Colton and Charlie Coyle both playing the wing on that second line with Brock Nelson, for example. Like, you have 8 options. 2 centermen, kind of Charlie Coyle as another centerman, and then 6 guys you can slot in on the wing at any given time. That's incredible. So Joel Kiviranta being on the third line as a guy that should never go up but only stay there or go down, like there's nothing wrong with that, especially for a guy who's got goals in 4 straight games. His ice time, because of what's happened now with these 8 players that you can trust in your top 6 at any given time, he was playing, like, if you look at his last 10 or so games, so 7 games before the trades. Here's his ice time. And I'm not going to count the seconds. I'm just going to round up and round down. 11, 12, 11, 12, 12, 12, 14. Those are his ice times in the 7 games before Brock Nelson and Charlie Coyle came in and Casey Mittelstadt went out. So let me do that again. 11, 12, 11, 12, 12, 12, 14. Ever since those guys got here, 9:34 against the Leafs, 9:37 against the Blackhawks, 8:53 against the Minnesota Wild. I am about 90% sure that in each of those 3 games, he was the only forward to play less than 10 minutes. He was yesterday for sure. He was against the Leafs for sure. I just want to check the game that Miles Wood came in. And yeah, Miles Wood played 11:06. Jimmy VC played 10:22. So in each of these last 3 games, Joel Kiviranta has been the only guy to not hit the 10-minute mark. And what a difference that is on just 2 months ago for the Avs. What an unbelievable difference that is. They had 5 guys in the lineup at any given time between the Ivan Ivans and the Yuri Analas and the Chris Wagners and all those kinds of guys, where it was Matt Steinberg and Preshepov. And it would be 4, 4, 4, 5, 5, like unusable amounts of minutes. Now you're at a point where, going back to that Blackhawks game, like this was a game where it was 0-0 for 40 minutes. But let's look at these ice times. Let me read out some of these forward ice times. And I'm actually curious about the 2 new guys, how it compares to their season averages before they got here. Charlie Coyle averaged 17:38 with the Boston Bruins this year. 18:04 last year. He plays a ton. In that Blackhawks game, he played 13 minutes and 27 seconds. And by the way, that's the most ice time he's had in any of his 3 games with the Avalanche. Brock Nelson Brock Nelson in the Blackhawks game played 16:24. Brock Nelson with the New York Islanders was averaging 19:21. Brock Nelson with the Colorado Avalanche is averaging 17:44. So both of those guys already, you see them spreading the wealth. They have the depth to do that. Now let's go through the other forwards. Val Nichushkin against Chicago played 17:50. Pretty low for him. Jack Drury, 11:45. Ross Colton, 10:53. Jimmy Vesey, 10:22. Jonathan Drouin, 13:23. That's a top six winger. Miles Wood, 11:06. Arturi Lehkonen, 18:15. Marty Neches, 19:21. Joel Kiviranta, as we discussed, 9 minutes and 37 seconds. And then, of course, you got Nate Dogg, Nathan MacKinnon, 23:58. They're spreading the wealth. The minutes are a little bit more distributed. Nathan MacKinnon's still playing a ton. As compared to the Stanley Cup year, he was playing nowhere close to that. But this is what you need. You need guys like you had with Darren Helm, Andrew Cogliano, and Logan O'Connor on the fourth line, where you can play them 10 to 12 minutes a night. You feel comfortable. Plus, you had one of pretty much every night, it was either Nicholas Aubé-Kubel or Nico Sturm also giving you that kind of ice time. You feel good about it. Zero passengers. You cannot have a passenger on the ice. If your worst forward is Parker Kelly, and it's Parker Kelly, the one that plays on the wing, I like the one that plays center. I love the one that plays on the wing. That's your worst forward. You're looking pretty good. And you know, if you lose a forward, you still have Jimmy Vesey and Miles Wood. Are they the best options? Probably not. Are they the worst options? Absolutely not. That's depth. That's what the Avalanche have now. I do want to touch on a few things. Obviously, Nathan MacKinnon hitting his 1,000th point. Not once, but twice, as we like to joke about. I did love how post-game he talked about how, like, when the guys all came off the bench and they were all talking about it, they were all like, we don't really know if that was onside or not. And they kind of were like winging it and going with it. So I thought that was really fun. I want to touch really briefly on Eric Johnson being back. I think for all of the many podcasts that I did throughout the season talking about how the locker room vibes are off, it's nothing but impeccable with Eric Johnson back in there. I thought he looked totally fine. I thought he looked like exactly what you've been getting from Jack Johnson the last couple years. I thought he was a good fit. I love seeing him slide on his stomach to break up that 2-on-1. Very vintage. That brought me back. That's a leader, and that's a guy that belongs. Again, in the limited role that he plays, where he's also not going to play every night. And I love that he mentioned, like, I don't have bumps and bruises. I'm not playing every night this year. I'm not nursing anything. That's also great. As Sam Malinsky continues to play, he plays well. He stays in the lineup. He doesn't play well, you have Eric Johnson. You need a more tough lineup, you put in Eric Johnson. You want to go high flying, you put in Sam Malinsky. Options. Coach's decision. Options. I love it. Last thing I want to touch on is the shootout. I wrote about this in my 10 observations last night. I truly wonder... And I know the season's almost over, and there's only 17 games left, and the Avs have already been in 3 shootouts, so it's not really a common thing. I truly do wonder if at some point, if it becomes common, if they play 4 or 5 of them in a 10-game stretch, or next season if Jared Bednar has a conversation with Mackenzie Blackwood and says, hey, how about we bring in Scott Wedgwood to play cleanup for the shootouts? Those were 2 of the most uninspiring shootout attempt saves I've seen. Mackenzie Blackwood has stopped 0 of 5 shots he's faced in 2 shootouts with the Avs. And if you include the Sharks, he has made 3 saves on 13 shots against. League average is a .657 save percentage. He has stopped .231. So he's about 42% below league average. Pavel Francouz used to be exceptional at these. He was like 15 for 15 one year. Alexander Georgiev, for all his faults, were exceptional at these. It's not Blackwood's forte. I don't even know if it's Wedgwood's, to be honest with you. I got to dig into his numbers, and I haven't done that yet. Last thing I want to say, I know I said that the shootouts would be the last thing. Well, really quick on the shootouts. Nathan MacKinnon, dude, you're a speedy skater that when you come in on the breakaway, all you do is just bull rush the goalie and use your sick shot to score. That's what your shootout attempt should be. This whole thing where Nathan MacKinnon comes in slowly and dipsy doodles 15 times and then shoots it into the guy's pad is not necessary. If you're Nathan MacKinnon, put on the burners, go in, fire right when you get between the hash marks. You'll probably score most of the time that way. Last thing I want to touch on, that shootout loss ended an 11-game winning streak for the Colorado Avalanche with Valeri Nichushkin in the lineup. Also, since getting rid of Alexander Georgiev, with Nichushkin in the lineup, Colorado is 12-1-1 in 14 games, 10-9-2 in 21 games. That Minnesota loss was obviously the one at the end. The one in the middle was the 3-1 loss to Vancouver about a week after Blackwood got here. Every other of the 12 games since Blackwood got here, which guaranteed that you either have Blackwood or Wedgwood as an option, 12-1-1 with Val Nichushkin. This guy can't miss in terms of being an important part of the roster. So that's all I got for you guys today. I'm going to have another podcast tomorrow with Sean Drotar over at Mile High Sports. We're going to do a segment together, and I'll have that up for you guys. And then on Saturday will be the next one that I do by myself. I'm going to preview everything about the Colorado Avalanche Dallas Stars matchup coming up on Sunday. God, if you're the Avalanche, you really want to win that one and feel good about yourselves and inch closer to home ice advantage and catching the Stars in a game where Mikko Rantanen returns to Ball Arena. But before we get there, we got the Calgary Flames on Friday and then the Avalanche heading back home. So if you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out you.